Here we are in the Congressional Corner with Republican Congressman John Faso of New York's 19th District, in office since 2017. So, John Faso, you're the man of the hour. An awful lot of people angry at you. You know what I mean? They say you voted for the bill, and they want to know why you did that.
Well, because simply, I believe that this legislation will lower premiums and deductibles for the great majority of people in our state and country. And we preserve the protection that's in the ACA for pre-existing conditions. We preserve the ability of a child to be on their parents' health plan through age 26. And we also preserve an important reform that was in the ACA, which is moving from fee-for-service medicine to value-based medicine. But there are some critical ingredients here that also are similar to the ACA but different. One is that we're finally equalizing the tax treatment for people that don't have employer-provided health insurance. In other words, if you work for an employer that provides health insurance today, that is a large tax benefit that you receive. It's not taxable to you. But on the other hand, if you don't work for an employer that provides health insurance, you receive nothing under the tax code, no subsidy, no incentive whatsoever. So this legislation establishes for the first time a health care tax credit, which someone can use to basically buy health insurance on the private market. And that tax credit will expand, get larger with age, and it also gets larger with family size.
Now, John, a lot of people are saying that, you know, the last score showed 26 million people being thrown off of health care as a result of this.
Well, the CBO estimated 24 million. See, okay, I just saved 2 million right off the bat.
I hear you.
So they said 24 million. While I have not criticized the CBO analysis, there are certain pieces in the CBO analysis that I don't agree with. But also, every one of the changes that were made in amendments to the legislation since that CBO score came out last March, every one of the changes were intended to address legitimate concerns that CBO had.
Yeah, but wait. But before you even go any further, it seems to me that we have a problem here, because there should have been a CBO score for this bill, too, but there wasn't.
Nor was there one when the ACA passed.
Well, so, two wrongs don't make a right. But
well,
John,
I'm just pointing that out to you, Alan, because here's where the difference is. They passed the final version of the ACA without a CBO score. Here we are just at part of the process through the House. Now the CBO takes a while to analyze these various changes, and they're also, you have to understand, there are many, many variables that go into place. So the CBO can only estimate within a range. So given, for instance, the CBO estimated after the ACA was passed that by this time there would be 23 million people buying insurance through the exchanges. There are actually about 8.5 million people getting insurance through the exchanges. So I say that not to criticize CBO, but to simply point out there are many, many variables that go in that could be within a reasonable range. And so what the Senate is going to do now, they're going to take the House bill, they're going to work their will. I know they're going to take certain provisions out, I'm sure. They're going to put certain provisions in. CBO is going to come out with an updated analysis of the House bill, and they'll also do the same thing for various proposals that come out of the Senate. But the CBO score is not something you can automatically get by plugging in a few variables and spitting out an answer. It doesn't work that way. It takes a long time to get this analysis. So we were addressing the CBO concerns. For instance, let me just give you one. The CBO said back in March that because of the age banding requirements in this legislation, that people between 50 and 64 would have higher premiums, in some instances unaffordable premiums. So we specifically put an $80 billion fund in the legislation to subsidize the cost for people between that age bracket.
Well, wait a second. How does somebody get that $80 billion as part of that $80 billion? It seems to me one thing is if I have Medicare and I just give them my card and it's very simple. But if you do this other thing, which is an $80 billion slush fund, if you want to say it, in order to survive,
it's a subsidy.
How do they access that?
Through the insurer. the insurer will price the premium. It'll say, okay, we have 10,000 people who are in the group between 50 and 64. They will be able to receive a subsidy on behalf of those people from the federal government to lower those costs. And so that's how this operates. Now, in fact, if that were your criticism, then you would question how does the ACA work. The ACA works in very similar ways. One of the big differences between the new legislation and the ACA is that the ACA says in order to receive the premium support or the subsidy that they offer for people to buy an exchange plan, one of the bronze, gold, silver, or platinum plans, in order to get that subsidy, it must be an ACA-approved plan. This new legislation says it simply needs to be a state-regulated insurance plan, and you can use the subsidy. That will do two things. One, it will widen the market in terms of the variables and the variety of choices that insurers have to offer to employers. Because one of the things that I've heard over and over again, Alan, from employers is that our deductibles and our premiums have skyrocketed since the ACA. And a lot of this is because of a lot of the regulatory requirements that were contained in the ACA. So we're going to go back to the state level and we're going to have state regulated plans, but we're also, to in order to lower premiums and deductibles, we are offering high-risk reinsurance models funded by the federal government, $138 billion over the next 10 years, to lower premiums and deductibles for people. Because the key here is to protect the people that got insurance for the first time under the ACA. No one wants to change that. But also lower the costs and premiums and deductibles so that the promise that was made in the ACA, which was not fulfilled, that you could keep your health plan and you'd lower your cost by $2,500 per family, that was not fulfilled. So that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Now John, there are people who say that you specifically said you would not vote for certain things when you did. For example,
people say a lot of things, Alan.
Well, I'm just saying that's what people say. So therefore, and we know when you came in the building today, there were people in pink hats out there protesting, you know, your presence. So my question to you is, what about things like Planned Parenthood? What about, you know, women's right to decide on their own bodies and their own bodily functions?
Well, this abortion is not affected by this bill one way or the other. The issue that I didn't agree with in this bill was including the one-year prohibition on Planned Parenthood receiving Medicaid funding for provision of services to patients that were not abortion.
But you said you wouldn't vote for that.
No, I said I would not vote for that. I did not support that provision, but I made it very explicitly clear to Planned Parenthood when they met with me in my office that my vote ultimately on the bill would not depend on whether that provision was in or out. In fact, when I had a vote on that particular provision, I voted to remove that provision from the bill in the budget
committee.
But
you still went along with the bill.
Well, that's exactly what I said from day one. I said my vote ultimately on passage of the bill would not depend on whether that provision were in and out.
Well, they heard something else. Well, they heard you say you would not vote for it.
No, they are incorrect, because I told them explicitly in my office, both in a meeting in Sullivan County and a meeting in Washington, that would not determine. Any one provision was not going to determine whether my vote was going to be decided on that one provision.
So it must.
Alan, let me just reiterate. When I had a vote in the budget committee, I voted to remove that provision from the bill. So, you know, people want to hear a lot of things, but the bottom line is I did exactly what I said I would do.
We've been talking with Congressman John Faso of New York's 19th District. So when we come back, we'll have other things to talk to him about.